endurance. Let's open our Bibles to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. I want to finish this off. We didn't get too far last week, and that's okay. But I want to give you some hands-on ideas that can help you in the struggles of life. Life is hard. The Scripture gives us hope. The Scripture gives us help. And I'd like to introduce or maybe just remind you of some of these hopes and definitely helps that are in the Scripture. Again, we're just going to read just the first four verses of Hebrews 12. And because I do want to finish this up today, and then next week is discipline. We're going to go on to verses 5 and following to about 12, 13, about whom the Lord loves, he chastens. So we need to come up with a biblical theology, a biblical perspective of hardship, of difficulty, and of suffering. But we'll do that next week. This week, we want to continue to endure. So Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1 says, therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. You have not yet resisted bloodshed, striving against sin. And we'll stop there. And then verse 5 says again, and don't forget, whom the Lord loves, he chastens. If you're not chastened by God, then you're illegitimate. But we'll talk about that next week. Today, let's continue running the race that is set before us with endurance. All right, last week we started out with all kinds of various scenarios in which sometimes people are willing to quit. Sometimes it's in a relationship, sometimes it's jobs, sometimes it's even the pain, with the chronic pain. Sometimes it's in a marriage, and people just say, you know what, I'm done. I don't have to, and I don't want to live life like this anymore. And we try to work through the first couple of verses, the cloud of witnesses. Again, I do not believe that the cloud of witnesses is like they're in an amphitheater and they're looking down upon us. And the reason I say that is because of Hebrews chapter 11, verses 1 and 4, talks about the witness of Abel and how his witness or his testimony is still speaking. We have a witness. We have a testimony. And it's more of a record, written record here in our Bible, rather than them like grandpa looking down at heaven on us. Because again, as I said last week, to me that would not be heaven. To be honest, when I die, I do not want to look down, because some of them have been dead for thousands of years, or even, let's say, since the birth of Christ. So for 2,000 years, they've been looking down on earth. Ay, ay, ay. I don't know if that would be heaven. But that's just my personal thinking. There's other people that think there's an amphitheater, and they are looking down upon us. Regardless, we have a great cloud of witnesses around us, and there's this call for us to endure. And again, it doesn't matter if you're old. You can still endure like Abraham and Sarah endured. It doesn't matter if you have a checkered past. You can still endure like Rahab the harlot. It may be that your struggle, as you're honestly looking at it, humanly speaking, there is no end in sight. And you can endure like Noah did. For 120 years it took him to build that ark. But again, as I said last week, don't miss the point. As we go through Hebrews 11, God used ordinary people. Samson's in there too. And usually when we think of Samson, we think of Samson and, yeah, so just ordinary people with feet of clay and great character flaws, and yet God used them. And if God used them, he can use us We may never be inducted into the NASCAR or the country western or the music or the rock and roll or the baseball or the football Hall of Fame, but every one of us could be inducted into the Hall of Faith and into the heroes of the faith. We went last week in verse 1, we're to get rid of the weight, everything and anything that hinders us. And it could be sometimes even some things that are basically neutral. Could be work. Work could become a weight that would hinder us from running the race of faith. It could be any number of things. We used last week like lawn care and taking care of the yard. The yard work could really become a hindrance to me coming to church on Sunday. Because to be honest, I'd rather have mowed my yard early this morning than going out there this afternoon in the heat of the day and mowing it. So we can just kind of set church aside and do the chores in the cool of the morning. And on it goes. We're also supposed to, there in verse 1, get rid of the sin. And again, because of the Hebrews 11 Hall of Faith contextually, I do believe the sin is going to be unbelief. It's a lack of faith. But as I said last week, if God's pointing on you saying, listen, you need to stop doing this, then you need to set that sin aside as well and be running the race. The race. The race is long and the race is hard. There is a need for endurance. We are to run this race that is before us. And again, it's a race. It's not a 100-meter dash. It's not a 220 or 440, some of us who are a little older. 220 yards or a 110-yard dash. This is a lifelong race. You know, again, Noah built that ark for 120 years. Abraham and Sarah waited 25 years for the son to be born. It's a long race, and we must be in it for the long haul, and we must run it to win. As 1 Corinthians 9 says, when we get in the race, we just can't think we're in for a Sunday stroll. We just can't be lackadaisical about the rules. Well, I don't care what the race course is charted out. I'm going to run my own race. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump off the blocks. I'm going to cut across the football field and shave off, you know, half the distance. No, when we run the race to win. So we must run it and we must obey the rules. We just can't kind of pick and choose. Well, I think I'll go down to the bleachers, then I'll just sit and rest a while. If you're in the race, run it to win. Win so we can sit and there stand before God and hear the words, well done, good and faithful. But then even you and I, we must accomplish everything that we need to do in order to build endurance within our body so that we as a body can be very much in it for the long haul in our task or in our mission to rescue lives and restore relationships. Because ministry is messy. And there's many times where you just want to say, man, oh man, I'm done with this too. But we want to continue to develop endurance in our life and in life of the body so that we can encourage others in our mission of rescuing and restoring. And then last week as we got near the end, we're at verse 2 of Hebrews chapter 12. We are to, again, focus on the right individual, looking to Jesus, says verse 2. And we talked a little bit, again, in our struggling with relationships, our struggling in a different job, a marriage, a child who's maybe rebellious, in-laws who have become outlaws, neighbors that are just making your life absolutely miserable, physical pain. Sometimes we quit the race because we're not focusing on the right thing. You know, where we're focusing on fairness in a relationship. We're focusing on respect. Well, if I don't start getting some respect, I'm done. I'm out of here. Well, if I don't get some appreciation, if I don't get some conversation or whatever it is, this is what I want. And if I don't get it, then I'm done. And I'm gone. We in our minds, and again, I do it sometimes too, but we all know, especially from Hebrews chapter 1, the gift of prophecy ended a long time ago. God in the Old Testament spoke with all kinds of various ways and burning bushes and all that kind of stuff. But now he has spoken to us through his Son. So we have the recorded words of God. But you and I still become prophets. Because in a difficult situation, We think through how this is going to end, and of course, that's as certain as the sun is going to rise tomorrow in the southeast. We just know that. It's not going to change, and we've got our own prophecy, and we're going to make sure it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and most of the time it's negative, and that's why we bail. So we can't be focusing on our own prophetic future. We can't be focusing on present personal happiness. This is a race that he has set before us. This is not like you and I going up to Court Creek Park or Tyler State Park or some other park on a nice cool afternoon and we got the dog or whatever and we're just kind of strolling around looking at the birds and the flowers and whatever else we can find. This is a race. So to focus on present personal happiness is not going to do us any good in our race. We have to focus on Jesus Christ alone. Which then brings us a little bit further into verse 2. Why should we focus on Jesus Christ? Because he is the author, the originator, pioneer. It's kind of interesting. One translation has the word pioneer. He is the pioneer of our faith. Going way back to Genesis 3:15 about the seed of the woman, the seed of the serpent. Serpent's going to bite the seed of the woman's heel, but the heel or the woman's seed is going to crush the serpent's head. So he is the one who brought about this salvation. It is amazing grace. It really is. All the sins that I've been racking up now for 48 and a half years, they're all, or 58 and a half years, they're all still there. But God in his grace and mercy removed them. He is the one who brought about this whole idea of deliverance from our sin or salvation from our sin. And that is truly, truly amazing. He is the source of it. He's our chief example. He also then is the perfecter or the finisher of our faith. He did run the course. He did finish the race. He is now sitting at the right hand of God the Father. So he completed everything. So if we follow him and follow his examples, we too will end up at completion. It's kind of like, you getting a whatever it is. Probably let's go a new car. Because, I mean, I think the owner's manuals are probably about that thick for the navigation and then the stereo and then this and that. Like, used to be just a very thin book, but nowadays, I guess they're huge. So you get a car and you're kind of wondering, like, how does it all work? Well, you can do the trial and error ways and just start pushing buttons, or you read the book. But if you read the book from the guy who designed it, by the time you get to the end of the book, you know how everything works, right? Well, if we will but follow Jesus, who started it and finished it, and if we follow him and read everything in the manual, we too will end the race successfully. He is the author, and he's the finisher of it. And as you read a little bit further of that, it says in verse 2 that he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And that's just amazing, because here's one other thought. Sitting down in the Old Testament temple, when you guys remember your Sunday school classes about either the temple or the tabernacle, maybe you went to Lancaster and you looked at their rendition of the tabernacle, how many chairs did you see? There are no chairs. There are no chairs because whether the tabernacle or in the temple, the priest's work was never finished. They were always doing, moving, doing things, continually receiving sacrifices and taking heads off or washing entrails and throwing blood on the corner of the altar or burning it. They were always doing. There was never a seat in the tabernacle or a temple. But now God has sat down, which means the work is finished. So for you and I, as we talk to those around us who are unsaved, we need to try to communicate to them the foolishness of trying to add additional works to something that has been completely finished. Since the beginning of the Levitical priesthood system, never did the priest sit down. Now our great high priest has sat down. The work is done. It is finished. And we need to try to communicate that to our friends. Let me show you something else here in verse 2. It says there in verse 2 that he endured the cross, despising the shame. Go back to chapter 1, verse 3 for a minute. I again want you to see again the value of following Jesus' example. When we get into the very difficulties of life, we need to focus on Jesus. Notice chapter 1, verse 3. It says, "Who, being in the brightness of his glory, and the express image of his person, and upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had," what's the next two words? "By himself purged our sins, sat down." Sometimes you and I, when we're going through difficulties and struggles of life, we think no one can understand, first of all. Secondly, that I'm in it all by myself. I'm in it all alone. Jesus knows exactly what you are talking about. When he came to his own, as John 1 says, John 1:11, he came to his own, and his own what? All by himself. By himself, he sacrificed and he purged our sins. The disciples. Okay, first of all, Judas betrayed him. Then they all took off. They all fled. One of them actually ran out of his clothes. And then you have Peter denying him. And then you got the crowd mocking and crying, "Crucify him." Then you've got, while he's on the cross, one of the seven sayings on the cross is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" So it is by himself. There is no one else there. It's not like he's got a whole bunch of people cheering him on. He's running the last part of this race by himself. And endurance is often very difficult when those around you are either quitting on you, or are leaving you, or are mocking you, or betraying you. Endurance is difficult. But Jesus finished successfully by himself. And if we will follow what he's laid out, especially in the Gospels, we too can run the race. Okay? Let's go back to Hebrews chapter 12 for a minute, because we've seen this now a couple of times. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2, it says, "Who for the joy that was set before him." If you look at chapter 1, it has the same idea. "And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us." Let me ask you a question here. Who or how was the race set before us? Or who or how was the race set before Jesus Christ? And one of the things we can take from encouragement here is that there was a race, a predetermined race that was set. The end, beginning of the race, the ending of the race, it was all predetermined. It was set before us, and it was set before Jesus Christ. God has done this for us. Sometimes when we get in difficulties, it's very easy for us to just walk away, to quit. Not fair, not right. But God has put you in this position. And if God has put you in the position, he's given you all the resources to finish and go through this position. It's kind of like God never asks us to do something that he doesn't equip us to do it. So these races are not just bad luck, yin yang, or whatever. God has predetermined this race for us. And if he's predetermined the race that is set before us, he's given us all we need, as Peter says, to live life for life and godliness. So he finished the race, and there was great joy. And so too, if you and I, if we finish the race, we too will have great joy. He was being despised, and he was experiencing shame, again, as we see there in verse 2. He did it for the joy that was set before him. He did it for the joy that was set before him. Jesus could look beyond the pain and the torture, the shame and the hostility at the hands of sinful men. He could look beyond all of that to accomplish what God wanted him to accomplish, which was for us, as Isaiah 53 says, about verse 9 to down to verse about 12, give us salvation. And there's great joy that we have received as a result of Jesus' suffering. But you know what? It sounds awfully close, does it not, to what Jesus says, where he says to follow me? You know, the call of discipleship, follow me. Repeatedly, we have this idea of following me. And then it ends up with Jesus. The joy that was set before him was not only his exaltation, but providing salvation for all of us. The joy that awaits us, as Matthew says, and his master said unto him, well done, good and faithful servant, enter thou into the joy of your Lord. That is the race that is set before us. That's why, as we had a couple weeks ago, we must live by faith. If we live by our senses, my eyes, my ears, my nose, my taste, my hands, did I get all five? One of them I'm missing. If we live by our senses, we're not going to run the race because we're not looking for the joy that is set before us. I'm running right now to my water, and that's all I want is my water. I don't care about tonight. I don't care about tomorrow. I just want it now. It's kind of like the old commercials. Hold the pickles, hold the lettuce. Special orders don't upset us. All we ask is that you let us give it your way. And I want it my way, and I want it now. Present personal happiness is one of those weights that so easily beset us, that so easily ensnare us. Those of you that were maybe even exercising, because we did it sometimes in track years ago, they would have those big, heavy, like lead, I don't know what they were, bags you tie around your legs, and then you'd wear them, and then your legs got used to it. So then when you got to the race, you take the legs or the weights off, and your legs is like, whoa, there's no weight there, and it was supposed to make you run faster. I think I still ended in the back half of the pack, but doesn't matter. At least my legs were so much lighter because we were used to those weights. Living by our senses, tasting, touching, smelling, hearing, feeling, living for the present is but just one of those heavy weights that just weigh us down. Now, I want to go to verse 3. In verse 3, our struggle is not greater than Christ's struggle. And I want us to read again verse 3 a couple times. Notice verse 3, it says, this is now the second time. We're to focus on Jesus. Now in verse 3, he says it again. Consider him who endured such hostilities from sinners against himself, lest, that's one of those ahina purpose clauses, resulting condition clauses. We're to consider Jesus who endured such hostilities from sinners against himself in order that you do not become weary and discouraged in your souls. Here, my friends, is the cure for not quitting, or the cure for quitting. You want to not quit? You want to continue on in your difficult relationships? You want to continue to stay in that difficult job situation? Do you want to continue at your home and not have to move because of your lousy neighbors? You still want to, well, you're going to have to go over to your in-laws the 4th of July because they invited everybody for the 4th of July picnic. You know how to do that? And do that, that's if run that race before you? Verse 3 gives you the antidote to quitting. You need to consider Jesus. There is no differentiation between that. You must consider Jesus. And again, when we think about the hostility that was before him, we oftentimes think of the cross and in this Passion Week, those 6 or 7 days before he was killed. But you know what? There was a lot of it going on before then. Do you remember at the age of 12 when he was sitting down at the temple and he was, you know, talking with the elders and mom comes rushing in having not been around the kid for a few days and she was in a panic. And basically, though we don't quite fully get the whole verbiage in Luke 2, she basically chews him out. Chewing out the Son of God for not being where she thought he was supposed to be. But he said, hey, mom, don't you know that I must be about, how's it go? My father's business. You know, mom, this is why I was born here. Remember the angels who said you're going to have this child and he's going to be God, you know, and well, I'm here now in the temple doing my thing and you come and chew me out? Now, moms, I don't want to pick on you, but I'm going to do it anyway. In the course of your lifetime, how many times have you unjustly chewed out your kids? Do you think Mary was any different? And it's speculation on my part, so we're not going to spend a whole lot of time there, but I think if Mary chewed him out once unjustly, there were some other times where she was exasperated, maybe not so much at Jesus, but just his life, and as Jesus is over there banging on a nail, and she's just really aggravated, she would turn to him and say, "Stop it!" Not so much that it's his fault, because nothing was ever his fault, and that might have even been some aggravation. But the point is that Jesus' life and the suffering that he endured was not just for the weak. But then when he became a man, whoa, is this not the son of the carpenter? Is this not Joseph's son? I mean, a carpenter, I mean, he's not of the priestly line. He's not a high priest. Who does he think he is? Galilee. Oh my goodness. Is there any living, decent human being that has ever come out of Galilee? They're all just a bunch of, well, half human beings. And he had that ridicule through his whole life. Yet he endured. And you and I can endure as well. If Jesus did it, and you're saying, yeah, but he was God. And yes, he was, but he was also 100% man. As we were reminded with the funeral just a week ago Friday, he stood before his friend's Lazarus' tomb. And in John's gospel, we got that wonderful short verse, two words, Jesus wept. So he was 100% man, and he knew exactly what was going on, and he just definitely suffered in a perfect way. If we don't consider Jesus, kind of interesting, here's something that I learned the other way. Have you ever heard the expression, "Well, just add it up"? Nobody? Okay, well, let me give you something, an idea here. Back in the old days, in the first century, the mathematicians would literally add it up. And they draw the line up there, and then they put the total. Here in America, at least in my lifetime, we flipped it. We add down. Well, back in the first century, they would add it up. They take their all their arithmetic, and they would add it up. They draw a line and put the total up there. That's the same word here in verse 3 for consider. You need to add it up. Take all of Christ's life and add it up and come up with a total. Because when you come up with the total after examining all the teachings and all the life of Christ, you will then not grow weary. You will not grow faint. You won't quit. Add it up, get to the total, and that will keep you going. That will help you endure. That'll help you endure. It's kind of like Peter. Remember Peter in the storm? And Jesus says, "Hey, you want to come to me? Come on." So Peter, I would imagine, man, jumped out of that boat. And initially, I would think he'd be thinking he's pretty hot stuff. I mean, wow, look at me. I'm just kind of treading right over these waves and everything is going well. And then maybe the reality of it all sunk in like, whoa, I'm walking in water. And as soon as he took his eyes off Jesus, what happened? He got wet. He got wet until Jesus reached down. Same idea here, my friends. We got to keep our eyes on Jesus, because when we start looking at circumstances, we start looking at respect, we start looking at what I think I deserve. I mean, as we've heard a few people say, listen, my friends, it's not rocket science. All I want from this relationship is, we got to take our eyes off that and consider Jesus and add it up and get to the total and focus on him. Consider him, because if we consider him, we won't quit. We won't quit on these relationships. The grow weary and lose heart, those are both athletic terms for the runners racing, panting, and then collapsing at the end of the finish line. We would use the term maybe crash and burn. If you do not want to crash and burn in these struggles of life, you must consider Jesus. We're going to look at this a little further in our growth groups, but I want to show you what I'm talking about and what I think the scripture is talking about, and we're going to use just the book of Hebrews. go back to Hebrews chapter 1, and let's just take a couple minutes to consider Jesus. Hebrews chapter 1. All right. So here comes the real heart of the time here, practical instruction. How in the world are we going to consider Jesus so we don't quit? Well, let's look at Hebrews chapter 1. Let's go first 10, and then we'll go back up to verse 2. Hebrews 1:10. You, O Lord, in the beginning laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. Go up to verse 2. Has in these last days spoken to us by his Son, whom has appointed heir of all things, through whom he also made the worlds. Who is this person to whom we are to consider? Who is this guy? Absolute power. Absolute infinite creativity. He is the one who created everything in existence. And as we use that Latin term, he created it ex nihilo, or out of nothing. So if you're going to follow me, and I'd say, come on, follow me, you're going to have a rough road, because I will slip, tumble, and fall. I was over checking out a possible baptismal location yesterday, and splish, splash, I was almost taking a bath. I hadn't really planned on it, but it was kind of slippery, and just as he said, I wouldn't go too far, I went too far. And it was one of those deals where the feet are going this way, and the back end's going this way, and down I went. So you don't necessarily want to follow me, because I am going to slip on that algae, and I'm going down. But Jesus Christ created the algae. He created everything, and you can put your absolute trust and follow him, because if he's got the power to create everything out of nothing, does he not have the power to give you the endurance you need to continue on in this difficult relationship, to continue on in this difficult job, to continue on with your outlaws that you're going to have to get together with next month at the 4th of July picnic? Yes, 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 emphatically yes. Let's go down to 2:18, chapter 2:18. Chapter 2:18, he says this. For in that he himself has suffered, being tempted, why? What's the last part of verse 18 say, of chapter 2? So that he can aid you. You know what? He didn't have to, and this is, again, mind-boggling, and I will take the time to do this, but God is all-knowing, and I've said it before, but it bears worth repeating. God is all-knowing, right? He's omniscient, omni, like some of you go to the omni theater, omni all around you, omniscient for knowledge. God is all-knowing, okay, omniscient, which means God knows everything, past, present, and future. Everything that could happen. Like Robin had at least a different shirt on, I think, this morning, and then I changed, and then she had a change. But she knew, God knows of all the different outfits that Robin could have wore today, as well as the outfit that she is wearing today. And God knows everything, past, present, future, actual, and simultaneously, and he knows it in one single, simple event. Did God need to experience this suffering? No. He knew all about it. But he went through the beating and the whipping and the berating and the mocking and the prejudice and the ridicule so that we'd have greater confidence in him. Oh, fickle human beings that we are. But he did it so that he could aid you, as verse 18 says. He didn't do this just because he had nothing else to do. Boy, eternity is getting boring, Dad. Let's see if we can find something to do. I know, let's go to earth and suffer for a while. He did it for you. Now, if he left heaven's glory and suffered so that he could aid you, do you really think if you call out to him and say, God, I need you like I've never needed you before, because if I don't get some help quick, I'm out of here. I'm done. I'm done. I've had it to here. The knot's unraveling. Of course he will aid you. Of course he will aid you, provided, as Hebrews says, you come to him in faith and believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him, because without faith it's impossible to please him. Let me show you one more. And I've come up with about 20 in the book of Hebrews alone, how we can consider Jesus. But let's go to chapter 4:11. Chapter 4:11. I love chapter 4. Rest. Rest. Chapter 4:11. In the just a few words of chapter 4:11, it says, "Let us diligently enter that rest." Remember Matthew 11:28, "Come unto me, all you are weary, heavy laden, and I will give you." Okay, let's back up just a little bit, say it a little slower. "Come unto me, all you who are weary," getting a little tired, "heavy laden," you think this is more than you can bear, and you're to the point where you're just about saying, "I can't, well, I guess I can do it, God, but you got so much more confidence in me than I have. Heavy laden, I will give you rest." And then he ends up there in verse 30, "and you will have rest for your soul." Does God ever lie? Does he ever hold that carrot out in front of us like the old illustration is to get a donkey or someone moving? You'd hang a, take a piece of wood or a stick or something and dangle a carrot out just in front of the donkey so he keeps trying to grab it. Does God do that to us? No, they're rhetorical questions. John Calvin said this, "For this one thought alone ought to be sufficient to conquer all temptations." John Calvin says, "Listen, there's no sense in just striving for heaven because we believe in eternal security, so we're all going to get to heaven. Let's run it for the prize, for the joy that awaits us." Let me show you one more thing and then we'll be done. Back to Hebrews 12. We're to run with the future in mind. Now, the future in mind, as I just mentioned from that quote from Calvin, to run for the prize. We have heaven. We have heaven. But we also have a few present promises that will get us through as well. Okay, we're all running for heaven. That's the, you know, that's what we have for. But the joy that waits before us. So we have the the future promises, but let me give you some of the present promises and I'll just read them and then we'll be done. We have the promise of a way of escape. We need to look to Jesus so we can access this way of escape, as 1 Corinthians 10:13. We need to look to Jesus so we can access the promise of forgiveness, 1 John 1:9. We have the promise of God's provision in Matthew chapter 6. As he's rebuking the believers, he says, "Listen, if I can take care of the birds, if I can take care of the flowers of the field, can I not take care of you? Do you think I'm more concerned with feeding the birds than I am taking care of you?" Rhetorical question. "Of course I will take care of you." Which, by the way, if you're worrying about this, your worrying is going to reach how many inches to your height? I mean, that's like worthless. So instead, just trust me. We have the promise of the harvest, Galatians 6. Whatever we are sowing now, we will reap. And if we're planting all kinds of good seeds, we will reap it. And the list goes on and on. So my friends, have you fixed your eyes on Jesus, or have you fixed your eyes on the grass that's greener on the other side of the fence? Have we fixed our eyes on Jesus, or are we fixing our eyes on present personal happiness? "But you don't understand. This isn't fair. You don't understand. This isn't right. It's not rocket science. All I want is some respect. It's not rocket science. All I want is appreciation. You know, all I want to do is just have a more intimate, a more closer. You don't understand. It's just not right. And you know what? I don't have to live like this. You know what? I'm not going to live like this anymore. I'm done. I quit. We're not going to the in-laws anymore. We're not going over here. And we don't have to live. We're moving," or whatever the case is. Fix your eyes on Jesus. Spend your time. Diligently study Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Look at Hebrews. and see what he has done before us.